All right. We're going to talk about long-term observations of crop water use and basically how we begin to really think about utilizing eddy covariance data coupled with crop simulation models and a number of different things. And it's been an effort. Christian Dold is a postdoc working with me that's done yeoman's work on a lot of these pieces in here, and you'll get to see his work in there. I've been working with him on this, but we've been with Bruno and Sartorius and looking at some of the modeling efforts that are going on at the field and landscape scale. John Pruger, Tom Sauer, and Ken Walker have been all participants in this. So there's been a number of different things that we've been working on. I'll just give you a little bit of background for those who don't live and breathe eddy covariance measurements. Basically, they're high-frequency measurements, water vapor, wind speed to get LE in there. But, you know, you still need the ancillary measurements of net radiation, soil heat flux, sensible heat flux to get the full energy balance. You know, you're looking at density, vertical wind velocities, whatever constituent of interest, and that slipped up as we went through a transition. So we can get this. I mean, it's become very routine. In terms of making measurements, we've found a lot of people trust those measurements, which is not always a good thing at times. And so you really need to be quite careful about all of this from that standpoint. If we were to begin to think about this, and I just three different slides of what we have, we've now moved into eddy covariance data. These are long-term stations now. We've actually been in the same field for since 2000 in terms of this. They're in soybean fields, they're in corn fields, and just pictures of all of this. But it's a 60-hectare field that's divided into one side's corn, one side's beans. Each side has got a permanently installed eddy flux tower. In about 2002, the producer got tired of jumping around our guy wire tables, and so we actually have them installed directly on concrete pads in the guest rows so that they can plant right alongside of them. We do take out a little bit of land for the heat, the solar panels and things like this. Data collection comes in at 20 hertz. It's summarized to 15-minute values. All of this data comes in real time to our laboratory. It's not collected in the field. It actually is transmitted back almost continuously. We're doing quality assurance, quality control on the raw values as it comes into the lab and everything else. And then the thing that nobody talks about in all of this is what's done in terms of gap filling, because no data set is perfect. You know, you've always got skips because of rain. You've got skips because something doesn't work. You've got skips because of just a number of different things that go on. We've collected all this data, like I said, since 2000. We're just going to show you data that we've utilized from 2006 for these analyses from a lot of different viewpoints. Here's what this field looks like in terms of the different soils that are in there. Were actually mounted. Why the tower locations changed on there, but the towers are actually in the same soils in different parts of the field. We have two towers. One's over corn, one's over beans, and then we actually decided in about 2008 we installed another tower. We installed a tower that's actually straddles both fields, and it's at a 10-meter height, and it's to simulate what happens when you have tall tower measurements that are representing multiple fields. Because when you start looking at eddy fluxes within an individual field, you've got one piece, but a lot of times we've got these tall tower measurements that are made as part of Ameriflux, a number of different things that represent a much larger footprint. So what does that represent? So we actually put one together to start looking at that dynamic as well. You know, and just to refresh everybody on ET so that we understand what we're all talking about. is that ET has that soil water component, and it has a plant component in terms of transpiration. Is driven by net radiation, water vapor gradients, wind speed gradients, and then in actuality, it's determined by soil water availability. That really is the rate limiting factor in all of this. The first three terms really give you the potential in terms of what the atmosphere wants. The soil water determines actually what happens from that standpoint. So that's the rate limitation in all of this. So we've been careful about what where those systems are relative to this, but it's begged another question in terms of just really what do these systems represent. So we, over the past few years, have been doing a lot of work on footprint analysis. What does that flux tower really represent in the context of that field? And so Christian has done a big job in terms of looking at this, and we do have a pointer. If you look at this central tower and you look at the two towers within the field, there's darker blue areas that represent the footprint. You get this taller tower through over the whole year. It really has a very big footprint. And if you went to something that was a 100-meter tower, just imagine how big that footprint is and how many different fields, how many different soils that really represents. And even that tall tower, or what we call a tall tower, represents, and you remember all those different soils that were within that, is that it's representing a great deal of combinations of different soils within that field. But here, and I'll just spend a little bit of time on this, these are the data 2007 through 2015, just to show you the, and this is the yearly averages, 90% confidence limit in the red line, and the blue line is 80%, and just how that footprint varies among the years, but it's relatively conservative when it comes to what that system is seeing. Changes shape a little bit just because of the wind patterns that do vary a little bit and everything else. But more and more, I think we really need to begin to understand that when we're putting measurements in the field, and it really makes little difference whether we're taking a soil water measurement, a heat flux measurement, a temperature measurement, or any of those others, that we need to understand what that system is really representing, you know, in terms of the dynamics of what's going on. And this is just the annual 90% footprint of odd years in corn and beans. If you look at this, the footprints are covering multiple soils even within that, because there's only seven different soils within that field. And so we need to look at that piece. If you look at yield variation within that, we've been very specific about looking at what that yields are coming out of that particular footprint for some of the analysis. And then you get this taller tower in terms of some of these dynamics. Is a fairly big aspect of really what we're capturing information from. And we do all sorts of information in terms of fetches and everything else, but in reality, I think the footprints help us determine really what's the confidence that we can put into this. But there's another question that goes along with this, because in each one of those fields, there's only one tower, and then there's a common tower that's between those. So we've been asking the question of really how representative is an individual flux tower. When we start looking at landscapes, you look at these, all these different pieces that are going on, what are they representing? And so we've actually been very fortunate in a lot of the cases that we worked at, where we have experiments across years where we have multiple flux towers within a field, within a watershed, I should say. And so we've been using these data to determine how representative a single flux tower is in a watershed context. There's a lot of interest right now in taking large-scale ET models, applying them with remote sensing, applying and then looking that back relative to a flux tower. What is that when you start looking at a point relative to an aerial average? What does that represent? 2002. We had 14 towers spread across a 10-mile transect within one of our watersheds. And these are in combination experiments where we've been looking at evaluating the SMAP, the soil moisture active-passive sensor across central Iowa. We're one of the test sites for that microwave system. So we've been looking at soil water flux data across that. 2016, we didn't have 14 towers, we only had 8 towers. And it's a combination of not only water but also CO2, because we've been calibrating and looking at the responses relative to the orbital carbon observatory, the OCO2 data that are going on from that standpoint. So we've been looking at this. We've been working on these analyses, and I'm just going to show you one graph on this in only one day. This is net radiation and all the different fields that are there, and there's the ET. And so just because there's a variation in the variation in ET is a whole lot bigger than the variation in net radiation. And you go back and you start looking at the soil properties in that, there's different soil water holding capacities. We found big fluxes across this watershed that we published on that was due nothing more than the timing of rainfall events and the distribution of rainfall events. We actually had one sequence in this watershed where it rained only on the western half of the watershed, and it didn't rain on the eastern half. And so we could look at fluxes immediately after that and begin to look at the changes in that. So we could see all these temporal dynamics. These temporal dynamics are really a function of even cloud cover as we go among these 14 sites, changes that. We get soil water holding capacity. We get feedbacks longer term in terms of how that initial soil water is influencing plant growth that influences water use. So you get to see all these different dynamics. So we're really trying to determine exactly what does this mean in the context of a larger sequence of what's going on. And then we've been looking back now at this piece that's here in terms of how can we take and really begin to look at ET fluxes over canopies. And, you know, with these typical curves of what everybody gets, you get net radiation curves, you get soil heat flux, CO2 fluxes, water vapor fluxes throughout the day. You begin to look at the dynamics of all of this, and all of us have been very good at generating this type of curve. We're very good at the individual day of what we can do with it. This just happens to be a different day in terms of 2010. This is a soybean canopy from 2012 in the drought year, looking at some of these dynamics, you know, because we still had water available. But then we put it all together and start looking at cumulative ET going on. And if you look at cumulative over a number of years, we can get some really smooth curves because we've basically taken all the variation out of it. And you begin to look and say, you know, that crop, both soil water evaporation, plant transpiration, it's about 600 millimeters on the corn, about 580 on the soybeans. And then we've added, and that's our 30-meter tower in which we've actually looked at that combination of what's going across those two fields. But then we've further broken it down into looking at what's the variation in different months. And this is by time of the day. And this is the average of all of the data for those 10 years by day, by hour in a month. And you begin to see that here's corn. We have a very high ET during the month of July, drops down a little bit in August, and then September, and you see all those different months that are going on, and obviously we didn't plot the variation around that. That would basically overwhelm this whole graph. Instructive enough, and when you start looking at this, here's soybeans, and that is that July and August are pretty much the same. In terms of water use because of the maturity of that crop, the growth of that crop, it drops down, and you see the daily ET is a lot different in terms of those dynamics. And then we've been very fortunate because we have one other site as well. We actually have a native prairie site that we have a flux tower over. And that number is down even less than the corn or soybeans. You see those dynamics. in terms of what's going on. But you see an entirely different distribution throughout the whole year because of the range in species that are within that. So we've got some cool season, warm season species. So the whole ET distribution throughout that growing season is different. And then it's all driven by this, the summer precipitation that's going on. This is rainfall. I just put minimum temperatures and maximum temperatures on that. Just so you can see that among those years, and when we start working across the Midwest, is that our supply of water coming into that system is extremely variable. And not only is it variable in terms of the total amount that's going on during the summer, it's also different in terms of the distribution. Sometimes we get a lot of rain that's occurring during the bare soil period. In a lot of cases, it's varying in a lot of different places from viewpoint. So we've computed a crop water stress index, just looking at canopy minus air, just to give you an idea that there's a lot of variation among the years in terms of water stress levels that that crop is going through and that feedback into that system. So all of that, when we start thinking about this, is that here's where I think we need to really begin to think about this whole world differently. And this is the aspect that in working with Bruno and Sartorius about that, is that our models are often 2D representation of what's going on. But the Eddy Flux Tower is really a 3D representation. It's representing a volume of soil, a volume of canopy. We tend to simulate just a profile of soil, a very thin profile of a canopy out there. So we're going to have to think about how we mentally transition from a 2D to a 3D representation of this. This is some data from Razio and Sartorius where we went back and looked at what's the rate of rooting going on within that. And he really began to look at this system. One of the things that is becoming very, very critical is really how rapidly is that root system exploring that profile? And are our models capable of being able to really accurately simulate that three-dimensional change in rooting distribution? Because we talk about soil water, we talk about all this, but really where's that plant capturing water from? And that really becomes a critical part of this. We've seen that in terms of looking at this. Bruno talked this morning about stable parts of the field and the unstable parts of the field, and we see that in these fields as well. And those unstable and stable parts are really a function of soil water availability and root exploration of really what's happening. If you were at Bruce's talk this morning, you also heard that when we start intercomparing ET models, is that they're driven a whole lot by really what's happening, and we see large variation among models in the soil water component as well as the transpiration component and all of this, and it's really determined a lot by patterns of water availability and patterns of root exploration. And so we've been able to come back and begin to look at just how rapidly that root volume is expanding within that. And that's a whole lot of work, right, Giselle, in terms of looking at this. But the other piece of this is that when we look at rooting depth and water tables, because across the Midwest, we have a very unique landscape as well, is that that's, those soils are poorly drained. Below that, we put in a lot of subsurface tile. Those aren't always uniform in terms of going across the landscape. We actually know where each of those tiles go below our eddy flux towers. But we can look at maximum rooting depth relative to average water table depth in all of this. And so what it says is that we're going to have to add additional information to our eddy flux towers if we really want to understand where the dynamics of water is going during the growing season, how that water is being extracted out of that profile, what's it mean in terms of the dynamics. So here's some challenges that we'll start with as well, is that when we start thinking about comparing crop models to eddy covariance data, it really requires a documentation on the soils within the footprint of that flux tower. And too often we just put our flux towers out, and we really never think about the soils that are below that. And it's really going to have to confine that in a much different way. That we really need to transition from this 2D to 3D thinking to begin to incorporate the dynamics of root exploration and water table into these models, particularly for the Midwest, because we have water tables, we have a lot of this variation that goes on that drives this process, plus this variation of rainfall that's occurring. But we also need, and we begin to see that from the intercomparison of the EVT models, is that these canopy dynamics need to be taken care of in terms of looking at phenological development, leaf area growth, surface condition, both water temperature content of the surface, residue content or covers at the surface. All of these influence the canopy dynamics in all of this. If we add all of that to our eddy covariance data, then we can even increase the value of long-term data sets using eddy covariance. But we need to start thinking more about what are the other dynamics that need to go along with this to make it a more valuable data set for the modelers. Because as we've worked with Bruno and Sartorius on this, is that we've now beginning to understand is what are some of those critical factors that we need to know in addition to just the flux measurements that are out there. They only give us part of the puzzle. And to understand the full dynamics of what's going on is that we need a lot more richer data sets from that standpoint. So with that, I'll entertain some questions.